At Farm to Table, we know how confusing healthcare is. We're here to simplify the healing process. We believe that healthcare should be simple. It should help people feel better. That's why we started the Table Talk podcast, to gather around the table with you, no matter where you are. We want to come and learn together and discuss a new healthcare approach that addresses the root cause of your symptoms. The journey for each person is unique, but together we can thrive. All right. Well, welcome to the Table Talk podcast today. I'm excited. We have an external guest today with us. So we have Dr. Alex Keller, who is one of the medical directors for FullScript. So thank you so much for joining us today. And why don't you just start off by telling us a little bit about who you are, and then we can lead into sort of the history of FullScript.
Awesome. Great to be here. Thanks for having me. My background is as a naturopathic doctor. So I was trained in Toronto, Canada. There's a naturopathic college here. And that was about 10 years ago. And shortly after that, I joined FullScript, which at the time was a very small company, about 30 people. It was just getting going in the space of allowing practitioners to be able to prescribe or recommend non-pharmaceutical products through an interface that at that time, going back now to about 2015, was revolutionary. Nothing like it really existed. You could buy supplements and natural health products and personal care products online. You know, Amazon existed, obviously, but there was nothing that connected practitioners and patients. And so when I joined FullScript, we were kind of just at the beginning of this ascension into many, many practitioners using a model like this across North America, to the point now where we have well over 100,000 prescribing practitioners using the platform, over 5 million patients who regularly purchase from the platform. And it's really one of the few platforms that connect the practitioner and the patient through the patient's wellness journey. I'll stop there because you don't need to hear much more about me.
Yeah. Well, thank you. We really enjoy our Canadian naturopaths. We had another Canadian naturopath on one of our conferences recently, and he was also on our podcast. So I appreciate that. Seems like a lot of the naturopathic community is up there, and it's fun to learn from you guys. But the next question I had was really getting into the supplement quality component. So we know that, like you mentioned, Amazon is out there. There's Walmart. There's all these places where people can make their purchase. We know the supplement industry is a $1 billion industry. There's so much people can have at their fingertips. They're being bombarded with ads on social media to purchase this supplement or that supplement. But what should people know about quality of supplements when they are making that purchase, when they're seeing that Instagram ad or that Facebook ad? What should in their mind they be thinking about before they say, yes, I want to put this in my body?
Yeah, it's a complicated subject, as it can be with pretty much anything we buy nowadays. There's lots of considerations when you're purchasing a product that's supposed to be for your health. And that can go right down to the source of the ingredients. You know, one thing in the supplement world that we don't have to think about in the pharmaceutical world is you're dealing with natural ingredients. So you have the raw materials to begin with. Where are they coming from? How are they grown? Are they wild harvested? Are they farmed? And then how are they actually harvested and dried and processed and then transported to the facility where they're eventually manufactured into products? Is there any contamination that takes place along the way? Is there tampering to the product? Is the way the ingredient is extracted, is it appropriate for health? Is there anything that's harmful in that, right? Like, I'm just peppering the questions here, but there's so many considerations in the supplement supply chain that we need to think about. And then that's just getting to the point where it's manufactured. After that, how is the product handled? Is it stored in the appropriate temperature conditions? Is it handled in the way that the seal is broken and there's air contamination where the products then oxidize, they're not as potent? Are there counterfeits that look exactly like the ones that you want to have but are not exactly the same? And then the next step in consideration is manufacturing and formulation. So if a company produces a product, they have to be thinking about the dosage of the ingredients, the form of the ingredients, and then connecting those to any available clinical evidence that says mm-hmm. this form and this dosage is good for this condition or good for the maintenance of health.
I think that's a great point. Just to chime in there, so often I see people, they're like, got this bottle and they're like, oh, it has inositol that's going to help my blood sugars. And then I see it has like 50 milligrams of inositol added to this combination product. It's like, well, the data is actually like 4 grams of that, like per day. So, you know, focus on PCOS or whatever condition. So I see a lot of that being marketed to people. Like it has all these things, but it has the therapeutic dose. And a lot of times the answer is no.
Yep. That's a great example. We call that fairy dusting.
Fairy dusting. I like that. I have not heard that before.
You're dusting a little bit of an ingredient for the sake of marketing to say this is now good for X condition, when in reality, to your point, all the evidence says that it actually needs to be at a much higher dosage or a completely different form, and it's not relevant at all. So that's where a lot of people can get misled, and you have to be so careful with the marketing that's in the supplement space so that it doesn't guide you down a path of I'm taking a product for lots of money potentially, and it's not actually doing anything for me. From my perspective, that's probably the most frustrating part of the industry. There's a huge amount of evidence for supplements, but very often we still hear the old narrative of, oh, supplements, that's witchcraft, that's nonsense. You know, there's nothing substantiating it. And the reality is that's completely false. There's an abundance of evidence, but you have to apply that evidence to the products that you're selecting and for the specific use. And if you don't do that, then you get into these situations where you're taking other fairy dusting products, you know, products that contain numerous ingredients at dosages that are not relevant whatsoever, or you're potentially dealing with taking products that could be harmful based on the situation. The other thing that's not ideal about the supplement industry is what we call proprietary blends. Now, I don't want to put all proprietary blends in the same bucket, because there are some that have been clinically tested and are validated to have benefit in certain conditions. And I can understand why some companies would want to have proprietary blends, because it allows them to keep their formulation secret so that others don't go and replicate that. That's right. You know, good business practice in that sense. By the way, I should mention, proprietary formulation means when you don't list individual ingredients by their dosage. You say there's, say, 500 milligrams of all of these ingredients combined. Well, you have no idea how much of each is in that 500 milligrams, right? So again, from a business perspective, it makes sense. But from a medical perspective, it makes no sense unless that formulation at that dosage has been tested in a clinical trial.
Right. I see that a lot in women's health products that have like Vitex in them or Chasetree. And my patients will bring the bottle and it'll say, you know, here's this, I am taking that. And I'm like, well, I have no idea how much you're taking, because this says, you know, 300 milligrams, like you said, and it could be 1 milligram. It could be a half a milligram. I have no idea. So I don't know that you're getting a therapeutic dose of that. And maybe there's some synergy, but you're right. If there's not an evidence-based trial on that particular proprietary ingredient, then as clinicians, we have no idea what to do with that.
Unless there's clinical evidence for it, right?
And yeah.
If you can find evidence for that formulation, then you can say, okay, that technically works in certain situations.
Sure.
But if there's not, then it's usually, again, a case of putting together various ingredients that have been tested individually and saying this product now is good for women's health, or this product is good for digestive health, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And you don't actually know what it's doing. So that part of the industry has muddied the waters, if you will, on what supplements can actually do. And that's why we generally advocate thinking about supplements from an ingredient-based approach and less from a product-based approach, so that you can think about, okay, which specific ingredients are beneficial. Like, for instance, omega-3 fatty acids, if used at the right dosage, can be very good for inflammation, inflammatory conditions, pain management, cholesterol management. But if you take a form that only has very low doses of EPA and DHA and not the appropriate, you know, 1 to 3 grams of EPA, DHA combined, you're not going to get those benefits. The evidence is there for everything I just said, but if you're not taking the right dosage, it's not going to do what you need it to do.
Yeah. And I find, particularly with omega-3s in general, because of the cost of having a high quality omega-3, people don't want to get to that 3 to 4 grams a day that they need for the inflammation, because they're like, wow, this is really expensive. And then, you know, they want to spend it on other, you know, I was going to lead into thoughts on poly supplement, because we talk a lot about polypharmacy and how people come to us on, you know, 30 medications or 20 medications, and we're trying to decrease those for patients. But then we get these patients, and I find, and sometimes it's my own fault of like, oh, you should take this and you should take this. And then sometimes they're coming from other providers and they've just got buckets of supplements, and it really, like, we're not fixing the problem, right? Like, we went from doing drugs, the drug therapy problem, to the supplement polypharmacy. And that, I think that's not really sustainable for patients, right? To ask them to take 10 to 15 supplements. I've even said in lectures where integrative people are saying, here's the 10 things that I would recommend your patients. And one person's in the back like, hey, like, if you could only recommend them five, like, which one would you pick? And so what do you say to providers about that, or patients about that? Like, how do we determine which ones are going to give us the biggest bang for a buck when we're trying to formulate supplement plans?
Yeah, that's such a great point and a really important topic again, not just with supplements, but kind of products in general when you're maintaining health. We've done our own studies looking at our patient population and looking at how treatment plans are delivered. And the more products there are on a plan, the less successful the plan will be. The sweet spot seems to be between 3 to 5 products maximum in a plan. And again, that's, you can just think about this logically. If you're being told you have to take 10 products and each of those products are $50 to $100, it's very unlikely that you're going to stay on that plan for the long term. So we train practitioners to always think exactly like the example you just gave. If you had to pick 3 to 5 maximum products, what would those be? And maybe you can, you know, tell the patient in priority order, these are the top 3 that I absolutely think you should take. And then these are the next 3 that you can take optionally. And these are the last 3 that are, you know, if you really want to go that far. So always keep it to 3 to 5, ideally. If you go beyond that, then it also becomes really confusing in terms of what you're taking and how to take it and when to take it. And listen, I've had many situations where people come into my office with a bag of products and they dump it on my desk and they say, which ones should I take? And then we also go through their medical history and realize they're taking 5 to 10 pharmaceutical drugs. And now you have a of chemistry that you
a
need
store.
To yeah. I have to build a table for them that says, take this at this time, take this at this time. Don't take these together. Don't take this with certain foods. Take this at bedtime. Like, it becomes completely overwhelming to maintain your health. So maybe another conversation, but at minimum, the first step should always be working on the foundations. So are your foundations a place, right? You go there, and I would say probably 6 to 7 out of 10, if you really establish strong foundations, you can minimize the need for products. Then you get into the products and you say, okay, let's start with what we can do that's non-pharmacological or non-pharmaceutical to begin with. That's where the supplements can come in. Okay. So if, let's say you need iron because your iron is too low, or let's say you need B12 or other nutrients, or you have a specific condition like high cholesterol and it will benefit you to have higher omega-3 or higher fiber or something like that, we can prioritize those first. Then you go to pharmaceuticals. And if you're already on pharmaceuticals, then we can talk about how do we get you off the pharmaceuticals by reestablishing your foundations and gradually improving your nutrient capacity and or swapping them out for nutritional supplements that can do similar actions like omega-3 and fiber relative to statins for cholesterol. So there's various pathways here, but really the ideal seems to be limit the number of total products, otherwise it becomes too complicated.
Yeah, exactly. And I love that you guys have taken feedback from practitioners and developed the option to put these in like a box where it can be easy for compliance. The pill pack supplement, or not really pills, but I guess they are pills, even though they're supplements, but they're able to say, I want this, this, and this in the morning dose, and this, this, and this in the evening dose, to make that simple for patients. So how has that been in looking at data? Have people been more consistent with adherence when they're offered some of a strategy like that instead of ordering 5 bottles?
Yeah, there's 2 pathways we offer. The one you just mentioned, and the other would be auto refills. So if you're on a plan of ideally 3 to 5 products and you want refills to be showing up at your door automatically based on when you're taking them, a lot of people have been drawn to that. The pill pack version, where we take various products and put them into packs, hasn't been adopted as much, but is certainly growing. And I think generally because there's a lot of consumer options out there where you can go directly to a seller of these pill packs, that people think in that way. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of convenience in just opening one pack and having everything you need. But so far we've seen that more people seem drawn to, this is my plan. This is how I take it every day. it is 3 to 5 bottles or liquids or whatever. And as long as I know they're showing up on time, you know, every month or every few months,
yeah,
people seem to be very drawn to that model.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I think the pill pack piece would go faster if like every product that you guys had could be put into it versus just the limited inventory. But I get that there's challenges and, you know, opening bottles and having them sit there and all of the inventory pieces of that. But I think, yeah, when I see patients and trying to navigate, you know, not giving them all these supplements and which ones are the core, I find that we use a lot more in the first like 30 to 60 days, especially if we're working through a gut plan or gut restoration plan, because we've got the antimicrobials and maybe like a powder to help with gut healing and sometimes certain probiotics that we might use short term and not, you know, forever. And so sometimes that is overwhelming. So sometimes I'll not add in like the other nutrients until we're done with the gut protocol, like do one thing at a time and try not to like throw it on them all at the same time to help with ease of things. Cause so many people are like, they think that whenever they're taking a supplement, whether it's a supplement or even a drug, that they're going to be taking it forever. Like anytime you ask them to take, you know, if they get asked to take a new medication by their physician, the decision they think they're making in that 5 minutes is, do I take this for the rest of my life or do I not? And oftentimes that's not the case, right? We can use supplements as tools for a period of time. We can use drugs as tools for a period of time. So helping patients understand that too, I think is helpful for getting things on board and utilizing them until we get the nutrients to sufficient amounts. And then maybe we don't need a separate B12 and a separate iron. Maybe we can do a multivitamin with iron later on once we get to a better place. We as practitioners can have good conversations with patients about that. I think that helps the compliance and just helping people understand what the future looks like as they're getting started too. So speaking of that, if you had like 5 core supplements or your like top 3 core supplements, what do you feel like Americans, Canadians, people that are eating this, you know, while we all are striving for that Mediterranean diet, I'm sure most of us are not actually achieving it on a daily basis. So what do you feel like the gaps are that most people should be looking at when they're looking and talking with their provider about supplements?
So let's put a pin in that. I'll come back to
okay.
in a second.
Okay, perfect.
And just touch quickly on what you just said in terms of prioritizing products.
Yeah.
I think there's multiple entry points for each individual when it comes to their wellness plan. So if they have an infection of sorts, or if they have a specific pain symptom or something that needs to be addressed right away, then you can start with that if that's the priority. Oftentimes, a deficiency, and that goes back to the foundations we were talking about, can be causing those symptoms. And so then you can focus on the foundations and the symptoms get naturally better. Great example of that would be magnesium. Magnesium comes up a lot. There's not great studies on this actually, but I think generally speaking, there's an acceptance now that the quality of the soils within which our foods are grown have depleted significantly over the last 100 years. And magnesium is a mineral that has been probably most depleted in the sense that we're not getting much magnesium in our foods anymore. And when you have a magnesium deficiency, you will get symptoms like tight muscles, anxiety, headaches, general pain, gastrointestinal issues like constipation. And so if you replete that nutrient, that mineral, by taking a magnesium supplement, oftentimes many of these symptoms, they just disappear because you were deficient in magnesium. So it comes down to identifying what's the actual need based on the individual. And to your point, what's the priority first versus the later priority? If they have something that's a burning need and you have to treat it, you know, like an infection, then you treat that first, and then you come back to the foundations after. You don't say, hey, you've got an infection, but we're going to focus on your B12.
Right, exactly.
With the infection and then come back to it. But to answer your question, coming back to your question here, I'd say that most people seem to benefit from a baseline blood screen. So I typically do that with all my patients where we do a foundational blood test, if they haven't already done that with their family doctor, to ensure that there's no deficiencies or no imbalances there. And more often than not, there is B12 deficiency because people don't eat a lot of red meat, especially in people who follow a vegetarian or a vegan diet. There's omega-3 deficiency, which manifests in various ways, like I mentioned, cholesterol imbalance or inflammatory pathways, liver issues. So omega-3 is a really big one. Magnesium, as I mentioned, is one that typically comes up, again, from a symptom picture. I tend not to test for magnesium. I just look at the symptoms and say you could probably benefit from that. Beyond B12, a B complex usually benefits most people. B complex is all the B vitamins in one combined product. And again, you're looking for in a B complex the right forms and the right dosages for the therapeutic benefit. So think of a B complex of like kind of like a multivitamin, but focused just on the B vitamins. Yeah. Those usually make people feel more energy. They sleep better, less stress, better muscle function, better digestive and cardiac function. You know, you're kind of hitting on so many different things when you B complex. And then you can go a little bit broader than that. If people aren't following a great diet, usually a good quality multivitamin solves a lot of the foundational issues. And you just kind of replete all the nutrients again, and then they generally start feeling better.
Yeah. Speaking of the B complex, what do you think about, and this might, you might not have an opinion or you may not want to share an opinion about this, but what do you think about all the companies that most of the companies that you work with their products having all methylated Bs in their B complex? So obviously we have MTHFR. It's a big discussion. There's lots of blog posts and there's good data out there that says, yes, you might have, because you have this heterozygous form, you might have less conversion, or maybe if you have the homozygous form. But then there's also like multiple different types of MTHFR. It's just not these two genes, but we have the most evidence on these two genes. So all of these companies are throwing all the methylated ones, and some it's like crazy amounts of methylated Bs. And then I find people that also have further down mutations, like myself, that have COMT mutations. And when you give them a bunch of methylated B vitamins, they're like anxious and their heart rate increases. But I find that it's really hard to find a quality multi without them. I found a couple companies, and one is like a food based, like Innate Response has one and that doesn't have methylated. But I find it's difficult, like when I'm trying to put together plans for people that do have that genetic predisposition to having more of the anxiousness from the methylated Bs. But have you guys had conversations about that with companies and said, hey, like I know Seeking Health has one that doesn't have methylated as well, like the minus one version as well. So, which are both available on FullScript. But yeah, so any thoughts on the over-methylation issue potentially?
Yeah, again, great call out here. That I think in the last 10 years, methylated B vitamins especially, but other nutrients as well, have been considered like premium version of those nutrients, right? And so because of the explosion in genetic testing, and to your point, discovery of MTHFR and other mutations, people just started saying, I need a methylated version. And then All of a sudden, methylated versions started becoming considered the better version. That's another very careful thing in the supplement world that you have to navigate, is just because it's different doesn't mean it's better. You have to know what's ideal for each individual. So I can't say that we've had a lot of overt conversations about this with suppliers. I think to your point, there's so many options that, well, there's not a ton of options anymore of non-methylated because everyone's trying to go premium route, but there seem to be enough options that we haven't had a lot of feedback that people are desperately looking for others. I think it's a great point that you're bringing up in the discussion we could have, but the overall point here, I think for your audience, is be careful of taking what's considered premium, because it may not be ideal.
Right. Yeah. Genetically. Or if everybody in your neighborhood's on some supplement and they say they're feeling great, you take it and you're feeling crappy, like there's maybe a reason why it doesn't, you know, whether you're having an allergic reaction or some level of inflammation from something, or your genetics just don't jive with that product. Yeah. But it's interesting, even like I've seen like products that are like amino acids and they're throwing in methylated or pre-workout supplements. And I'm like, dang it, like I really want to take this supplement, but I don't want it to have this adverse reaction in me or other patients. Because I've heard this a lot from people, and it's not just my own personal experience. It's interesting to me that it hasn't come up as much with the companies, but I have heard that too. I've heard, you know, from some of our supplement company partners where, you know, one science person is like, we really don't need this, but the marketing people are like, but this is what people are looking for. And so it's that battle in the industry.
And I want to make a point here that I don't want us to make people feel like supplements are inaccessible because now they're nervous. Which one do I take? Where do I go? Generally speaking, supplements are quite safe because it's hard to overdose on supplements. There are specific situations like this that you could get a reaction and not feel good. You know, another example would be L-glutamine. So Lots of people feel great taking L-glutamine, which is an amino acid that's needed for your digestive lining to recycle cells and keep your cell wall very strong in your digestive system. We often use that as a treatment for people who have intestinal permeability, but for some people, it metabolizes very quickly to glutamate, which can then act as a stimulant. And then you have the equivalent of feeling like you've just had MSG, right? And MSG, as we all know, is not good for you. It, you know, some people react very negatively to it, where they have anxiety, racing heart, all these negative symptoms. So something that's very good for many, many people, L-glutamine, can actually react very poorly with some people. And this is where, again, the emphasis should ideally be work with someone who knows these nuances in the supplementation world, and also ideally get some background data on yourself, like blood work, genetic testing, if you're okay with, a lot of people have concerns with genetic data being shared. If you're okay with that, then it's genetic data is really for understanding your blueprint of health for who you are, and then how to tailor your treatment plans going forward based on that. The more data, the more information you have about yourself, the more you can personalize your plan.
Exactly. Yeah. I learned the hard way with a patient that had history of seizures that glutamine also lowers seizure threshold and can cause them to have seizures. And there's even some other like antimicrobial ingredients that I've seen like data on that, because I've had multiple people with history of epilepsy as patients. So I think the supplement safety piece is an important conversation. If you have a condition like that, then this is something that you definitely want to work with a provider to make a supplement plan before you jump into just picking things online, whether, at Fullscript or wherever. So if you have, some of those more difficult to manage conditions or scary conditions like epilepsy, we would definitely want to go through history. But it's interesting, there's also nutrient depletions related to epilepsy and some cool things that, your providers can help you navigate as well. So that came to my brain because of you're talking about the L-glutamine. But yeah, even with DIM, I've seen some people, have estrogen like lower so quickly that then they start to have hives or some kind of reaction. And so it may not actually be an allergic reaction to it, but something, the effect of the medication changing your biochemistry so quickly, or the supplement changing your biochemistry. So having someone in your back pocket, like a pharmacist at farm to table, would be really helpful to identifying, what supplements are going to be the best for your biochemistry and your genetics, like you said. So not only can we take that genetic information and look at supplements, but we can all, and nutrients, we can also look at it from a nutrition standpoint and which diet type is best for you. There's so many cool tools out there that we can run your genetic data through and get reports that say, you might be best with a Mediterranean diet, or even though we think fat is good, you actually absorb more fat and you based on your genetics, and you probably should eat a lower fat diet than this person over here eating the carnivore diet. So it's so cool to be able to have that. Like you said, the more information we know, the better we can prevent chronic disease and, increase longevity.
Yeah, and speaking of that, so one thing that we've just launched at Fullscript that's meant to provide more information for clinicians, the clinicians you're working with, and that we hope to expand over time in terms of the data collection piece. We have this new feature called Active Plan, where as you work with your clinician, you can enter all of the supplements you're taking. So that bag of supplements that people will dump on our desks, mm-hmm. you can now enter that into Fullscript before you even see the clinician. And then the clinician will have a chance to go through all of the products and all of the ingredients that you're currently taking, basically have a consolidated view and say, look, one example, for instance, that I often do with patients who are taking a lot of supplements is, hey, we can consolidate this into 5 products. You're taking 20. Yeah. Many of them are at a low dose. Many of them can be combined. There's a combination product over here. Let's shrink this down so you're only taking 5 products per day. And mm-hmm. they love that because it's yes. less costly. Mm-hmm. It's much easier to follow, and then they know for sure they're getting what they need. So that's one step that we're going right now, is to gather more data on what you're currently taking as a patient or as a consumer so that your clinician can help guide you in your plan. Where this can eventually go, and you mentioned depletions, I think another common misunderstanding is that medications can cause depletions of nutrients. So you have to be very careful if you're taking pharmaceuticals long-term to treat something, that you could be causing downstream negative effects to the rest of your body, to the rest of your foundational health. And so eventually we want to be able to allow for people to enter their pharmaceutical data if they're taking medications, so that we can then automatically combine and say, this nutrient is likely depleted because you're taking this medication.
Yeah.
Or these nutrients and these medications should not go together.
Right. Or there's a benefit. Sometimes there's a synergistic benefit too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's where we're gradually going here, is allowing patients to have a central place that they can put all of their information like this, and then allow the practitioner or the clinician to be able to manage it with you in partnership.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you're navigating this all on your own. You're using Google and mm-hmm. now ChatGPT and others to mm-hmm. navigate, but you don't actually know what's correct for you individually.
Sure, sure. And then if someone sees multiple providers on Fullscript, does that information stay with them, or is it like if they're in the farm to table practice and they're in your practice or somebody else's practice, how does that work?
Not yet. But
not yet. Okay. Forward. That's coming. Okay, great. Because I know patients often are they're either coming from someone else or they're, you know, sharing with multiple people, and there's so much utility of FullScript, which is awesome, that it'd be great to be able to have the patient have the choice to share, you know, that information with different places without redoing it. Yes. Yeah. Well, that's really cool. And I love the integration that you guys have. Like, we're opening a new clinic here in Ohio that we picked a charting system that integrates with FullScript. So being able to just do that in our workflow and have that data, you know, go back into our chart is really cool and helps the continuity of care for patients as well. So I love that you guys are on the forefront of all of the technology components too, and not just supplying the patient. But what other resources, if patients are interested to learn more about supplement quality and supplements in general? I know you guys have some great blog posts and other resources. So can you share a little bit about those?
Yeah. So if you go to fullscript.com, we have an entire educational resource center there where we have blogs, webinars, protocols, ingredient reviews. The ingredient reviews, if you want to get into the technical details, we have about 30 to 40 ingredients right now that you can go in and see what the evidence is for those ingredients supporting certain conditions, certain situations, just to highlight again the amount of evidence that's available per ingredient in the market. Mm-hmm. So lots of resources there. I'll mention as well that we have a quality program that allows us to keep much better tabs on the products that we're distributing. So quick background here, I didn't explain earlier, but we are a software platform that practitioners and patients use. And behind that is a distribution network across North America that distributes products and delivers them to patients' homes, kind of like what you get when you purchase something on Amazon.
Right.
The difference, though, is the products in the warehouse are coming directly from the manufacturers, and we know what those products are because we control the supply chain. On top of that, all of our facilities are what's called NSF certified. So we have a third-party certification body that comes in and makes sure that our standards in our distribution centers are top notch. And then on top of that, we also spot check products by doing randomized testing every quarter. So we take products off the shelf. So they can't be tampered with. They can't be hand delivered by the manufacturers to say, this is the best product. You know, we want you to only test this.
Sure.
No, we just randomly take products. We bring them to a lab. We have them tested and we make sure that the products are what they say they are. There's no contamination. The dosage is appropriate. What's on the label is in the bottle. Those kinds of things. So just to provide additional assurance to when you're purchasing products through a platform like this, you know exactly what you're getting versus when you're purchasing from e-commerce distributors, oftentimes you're getting it from a third party distributor who's on a platform like Amazon, potentially selling it out of their garage. You
right.
don't know how those products are handled. You don't know if they're counterfeit. You don't know if they've been tampered with. There's a lot of studies and news articles now coming out around third-party sellers on e-commerce platforms and the risk of counterfeits and the risk of contamination. So not to try to toot our horn too much,
right.
but this is part of our mission here is, again, create an environment that is like going to the pharmacy to purchase your pharmaceutical products. You should have the same assurance that when you purchase from a platform like this that your practitioner is recommending, that the products are coming to you completely secure and the supply chain is checked end to end.
Yeah, I appreciate that as a provider too, because you want to make sure that what you're recommending is safe for the patient. And obviously we have somewhat limited efficacy. We have efficacy data for supplements, but it's not the same as what we have in, you know, the pharmaceutical world. So it's a lot lower risk also in compared to the pharmaceutical world. So most of the time we're like, okay, well, we'll try this and see how it goes. But I want to make sure that they're getting what I'm actually trying. I saw recently that this very popular Instagram video from a functional medicine colleague was talking about a data with berberine and weight loss. And then I could see all the comments were like, this did nothing for me. This did nothing for me. All of these things. And I'm just like, I wonder how many of them are actually getting a therapeutic dose of berberine. Yes, like, does berberine cause weight loss in everybody? Probably not, right? But there was, you know, some data that suggests maybe it does. But I do wonder, like, in this huge world of supplement industry, people try things and they're probably either not getting a product that actually has what it says it has in it, or they're not even getting the product at all, like, depending on where they're purchasing this from. So I think that's the scary part, is people not knowing that their money is actually buying what they think they're buying. And while that can happen in other industries too, like, I think in the supplement industry, it's definitely the most I've seen it exposed, you know, for patients.
Yep. That's, I think a lot of what we've talked about today is you have to know what the dosage is, what the form is that's supported by evidence. And then you have to have assurances that what's on the label is actually in the product. Right. You know, you didn't touch again on contamination. You know, there's a lot of reports coming out around products that are manufactured with ingredients that have been contaminated either with heavy metals, mold, even pharmaceutical ingredients. You know, if you're taking, there's a specific category of products that a lot of people have problems with. Usually it's weight loss or sports, like a muscle management. Yeah. Those in particular have a lot of issues with contamination, where you have to be super careful about what you're buying it from, because you don't know if it's actually a clean product. Right?
Yeah, to the point where some payment processors like Stripe or places like that won't even let clinicians sell these things on their websites because they don't want to be responsible for some of that contamination. So you know there's an issue if you can't even like legally sell something in the US, you know, on your website. So there's lots of great information here. Thank you so much, Dr. Keller, for being with us and sharing this information. I think that we have conversations daily with our patients about why they should be looking for these quality ingredients, but I think it's nice to have another person coming in and sharing their insights, especially from your guys' perspective. So thanks again for joining the Table Talk podcast, and hopefully we can connect again soon.
Awesome, Melanie. Thank you very much. Thank you for hosting, and thanks to your audience for tuning in.
Thanks for listening. We're excited you are on your journey with us. Find us online at farmtotable.life, farm with a P, and on Instagram at farmtotableteam.